Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lowell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Welcome, everybody, to All About Guitar, and we're just sitting here jamming, playing surf music tonight. Yes, tonight's about surf music, and I got some great guests here and players from the era, so we're going to learn exactly what it's about, where it came from, and also how to get the sound. I have three great guests in studio. Thank you guys for being here. First is Tom Potts, and Tom was part of the Chancellors, which was Paul Williams' first group that he played with. It actually started his career. Tom, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, and thank you for having all of us.
And he played, also was the house band with Casey Kasem, the Chancellors, and played with some greats back, people like Jackie DeShannon. And he has an organization called Family Friends and Fans of the 1960s Orange County Musicians, and they play surf music and all sorts of cool stuff all the time. My second guest is Matt Quilter, from the Reventlows, and we're going to learn what it means to play Death Surf Afrobilly.
Stand by for that one.
Yes, and he's also played in the Surftones and another band, High Tides, and he's the brother to Pat Quilter, who we had on the Flow Guitar Show, and actually they brought in Quilter Amps, so it's a family thing. And third, thank you, Matt, for being here.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff.
And Bobby Cochran, he's another guitarist, a session guitarist. I've talked to him, and he's done some very interesting stuff. Besides doing some of the surf stuff and the rockabilly stuff, he's also been the guitarist for Steppenwolf, and he played with another group that I actually saw play in high school, though you weren't in the group at that time, the Flying Burrito Brothers. So anyway, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And he's the nephew. Your uncle is the very famous Eddie Cochran.
Yes.
So anyway, welcome everybody. It's great to have everybody here, and we'll go through the gear in a minute because we got some vintage guitars here and vintage amps and vintage reverbs. Let me throw this out to all three of you: is where did the surf music evolve from? Where did it come from?
Well, let me field that one, Jeff, because I just happen to have this little group that goes around to various historical societies throughout Orange County, and basically we're kind of this musical forensic team who explains where surf music came from, what killed it, what brought it back, and it's actually kind of a cute little show that we do. But basically, to understand where surf music came from, you have to look at the post-war landscape. I'll try not to bloviate too long on this, but you're looking at a situation where you have all these servicemen coming back from the war. They came out here to train. They came out here to go to war. They all come back and they start making young kids, which is, of course, the baby boomers. They love Southern California. Who would want to go back to Ohio and places like mm-hmm. that after Southern California? So they all settled in the South Bay in Orange County. And all these kids growing up were exposed to, of course, the beach culture. And, you know, their parents brought back all this Hawaiian music from the people that served in the Far East. So we had a lot of tiki culture, a lot of lounge stuff, a lot of dreamy Hawaiian guitar and stuff like that. And all of this kind of set the stage for surf music. We kind of look at a very five kind of seemingly unconnected threads to understand what caused surf music to come up through the primordial ooze, so to speak. And we postulate that could only have happened here in Southern California. No place else could have born surf music like SoCal can. But what happened in 1959? Anybody remember? A seminal event in movie culture. The movie Gidget came out. All of a sudden popularized, you know, Moondoggy, Tube Steak, this beach culture. Everybody's down at the beach playing bongos. They're playing guitars in the sand. And every kid on the block wanted to pick up a guitar and start playing all the Calypso stuff, mostly at the time. You also had surf movies first came out in the late 50s. The soundtrack, of course, was all instrumental because the guys who invented the surf movies, they would come and actually narrate their stuff live, if you guys remember that. John Severson would come out and narrate in person Big Wednesday to a soundtrack of mostly jazz stuff, you know, but it was all very cool instrumental stuff.
Because besides Gidget, I remember the Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello.
Yeah, that came much later.
But let me ask you something. Wasn't Surf City in the back east? Wasn't that a East Coast place?
When you talk about surf and beach music, you know, it means different things to different people. You know, back east, this might mean R&B. They call beach music R&B music. Out here, you know, we of course refer to it as surf music, but, you know, the interesting thing is, where did that name come from? Who invented it? Where did all the guys who first sat down with guitars, how did they actually come up with the name surf music? Well, there's two stories. Do you want to hear them?
Sure, I'm curious.
Both of these are probably true. We have, in the South Bay, we of course have Balt Johnson and the Bel Airs. Mm-hmm. And they started throwing dances in 1961. Mm-hmm. And, of course, simultaneously in Orange County, in Newport Beach, we had Dick Dale at the Rendezvous Ballroom. Now, if you ask either of these guys where they got the name surf music, how did this phrase was coined, you know, Dick will say, well, man, it was the sound of the waves crashing over my head when I was out surfing. You know, the heavily reverb, you know, this whole deal, you know. And if you ask Paul Johnson, when they were throwing dances, a bunch of the local surfers would all come to these things and say, hey, man, your music makes me feel just like I was out on the waves. You ought to call it surf music. And so you can pick which one you believe.
Okay. But it was definitely a West Coast thing.
Absolutely a West Coast thing. And look at what else happened here in Southern California. We had the Fender Corporation right here in Fullerton in Orange County. And they had this brilliant marketing campaign to market their guitars to kids. They painted them all these cool colors. And all of a sudden, you had all those ad campaigns with, you know, the one thing with a guy out on the wave with his Jaguar saying, you won't part with yours either. So it was marketed to kids by, you know, with fancy colors and all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, let's not forget Top 40 Radio. This Top 40 Radio, when you look back in the late 50s, about, you know, I'd say 25% of it was all instrumental. And starting way back in the, I'd say 1956 to 57, the guitar gradually started replacing the saxophone as the lead instrument right. in instrumental music. I think the first one that I was aware of was that great sax thing, Honky Tonk. Well, mm-hmm. if you flip that song over, Honky Tonk Part 2 or Part 1 has that fabulous... get the idea. And so, you know, there was this endless free-form guitar solo by the Bill Doggett combo. I can't remember the guitar player's name. I apologize for it. But he had this wonderful free-form guitar solo. You know.
Now, did rockabilly come before surf music?
Absolutely. Rockabilly, of course, was in the late 50s. We think of surf music as starting at a very specific date. There were two songs that were arguably the first ever surf songs, and this was in 1961. And the first one, of course, was you can take your pick. It would be either Dick Dale's Let's Go Trippin' or Mr. Moto by the Bel Airs. Now, I should turn the reverb down because neither of those songs actually had Fender reverb on them. That was before the reverb unit, just before it came out. But with the Fender guitars and with the kids learning how to play guitar and the Fender Corporation, all of a sudden we had every kid in the bedroom with a guitar learning.
Right. Well, when that sound with the reverb, when they recorded, when like the Bel Airs recorded mm-hmm. Mr. Moto, did they put a lot of reverb in it?
No,
later?
That's a very dry recording, and so is Let's Go Trippin'.
Really?
And one of the cool things about instrumental music in the late 50s is that it was really accessible to beginner guitar players. I mean, a lot of people would have trouble playing that solo from Honky Tonk, but almost any kid could pick up a guitar and go, yeah. That's a very, you know, user-friendly guitar riff. And most of the stuff by the Fireballs, Duane Eddy, who am I thinking of? The Ventures, of course. We can't forget the Ventures.
They came later.
They were all pre-surf.
Okay.
These guys
Came
out.
The Ventures were before
1959 and 1960. Yep. And this is, of course, set the stage for instrumental surf music. I think that's about enough about the history of surf music. Let's talk about two guys who were actually there. And get their take on what it was like to be in a first wave surf band. This is pretty cool stuff.
See why I brought him along?
Yeah. Well, I want to mention something that, yes, there's a group called the Sierra Surf Music Camp that you deal with.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that.
And he explains all of this. So, you were perfect right on in bringing him down here. Because I never knew the beginning. I mean, probably my first experience, you were talking about 1959, I was probably too young to realize, though I listened to a lot of music when I was a kid, but it was really the Ventures that really caught my ear.
They, even though they're not considered a surf band, they actually jumped on the surf band wagon with their Surfing with the Ventures album, but they predate surf by a couple of years. But their song Walk Don't Run was really the blueprint for surf music, because it was two guitars, bass and drums with the heavily, the snare sound, and that
and
was really...
also television. There was, like, I love TV themes, and one of the ones that I really like was...
Of course, absolutely.
You know, or...
And there's a million of them. You know.
Yeah, and so we would play all that stuff. Yeah. And of course, the legendary.
Absolutely.
You know, all of that. Even though that, I think he was a British player. Yeah. But that was a classic, the Peter Gunn theme.
Absolutely.
You know, you were talking about the Ventures. They actually had Walk, Don't Run twice. And the first one was pre-surf. And then they came out with another version that was, what, maybe 64, 63, that had that break in it.
Yeah.
And so they actually redid the song
I have to find the record. I want to hear the original.
Yeah.
Speaking of the pre-surf instrumentals, excuse me for interrupting, but I have queued up one of my favorite pre-surf instrumentals. It was actually written by the Fireballs, but covered by the Ventures on their first or second album.
Okay.
And this is actually a very cool song. All the surf bands did it, but this is a great example of pre-surf instrumental that was co-opted by the surf bands.
All right, let's play it.
This is called Bulldog. This is in the key of A for anybody that's strumming along out there. It's a wonderful song. It's one of my favorite pre-surf instrumentals.
Now let's talk a little bit about the sound, how the sound evolved, and it that well now with the classic spring reverb and predominantly Fender guitars and Fender amps at that time.
Well, keep in mind that the early stuff was recorded very dry. All the guys back in the Fireballs days and the Ventures, they only had whatever was available to them in the studio. The amps had no onboard reverb on it.
Yeah.
And when the reverb came out in late 61, it really made the surf music come alive, because without that, there's none of that classic, glissandos. There's no palm muting.
Yeah.
And, all that stuff would be, we look for the drip, as they say. And if it's got that drip, then we know.
Well, if I remember correctly, I mean, most people attribute either a Strat, or we're using, mm-hmm. Tom and I both have our Jaguars and some Tellys. But I think actually Noki used a 335.
Well, in the early days, on the, all their album covers, they have Fender guitars, either a Jazzmaster and a Strat. Later, of course, we see them, they were endorsed by Moserite.
Right.
And the Moserite Corporation, they're a very unique sounding guitar. I would say 95% of all of surf music was performed on Fender guitars, either Jags, Jazzmasters, or Strats. And it all depends on your personal taste. I think the Jags lend themselves to the more the clean style of picking. The Jazzmasters were a little darker sounding, and of course Dick Dale, you know, shredded on a Stratocaster, with cables on it, and all of that through giant Fender Showmans with JBLs, and the Fender Reverb. It's the
now the Supers came later because we used to use Super Reverbs when we would do surf music,
and of course they have an onboard reverb unit, which of course we gearheads know that there's a difference between the combo reverb and a tube reverb unit, which is of course like a stomp box. You plug into that, plug into your guitar. So that means the harder you hit your guitar, the more reverb it makes. And of course in a combo tube amp, the reverb is after the first gain stage. So it doesn't matter. It's just there as a background. But here we use it as actually kind of an instrument, just like a stomp box. So if you play a very if you play it really hard, you get more reverb the harder you hit it, which isn't true on a super reverb.
Yeah, somebody had told me that it was the same thing with the vibratos. The vibratos on the early amps had a separate tube for it.
They did.
And then when they built the combo amps, like the super reverb and the twin reverb, they shared the same tube.
Yes, and
so it wasn't as strong of an effect.
They went to an optical, little opto.
Yeah, because I'm using now, this is... this is a non-reverb amp. I have a separate reverb unit, but you can hear the...
Right.
That's the vibrato. Tremolo.
So. And there are many circuits that Fender used. We call it kind of the wash tub sound, the washing machine sound, and the Blonde Showmans and Bandmasters, which was a very, almost a harmonic kind of effect. In the later amps, they used... it was much more of a choppier reverb sound. And, of course... my favorite is actually the one they put in the Tremolux. So I think that's probably, in my opinion, the best-sounding tremolo they ever put in a Fender amp.
And how was it different than...
I'm not sure of the exact tube component, but it used one less half of a 12AX7 in there, and it did not use an optical, photocell.
More like the old Cream Bandmasters?
Yes. Well, actually, it was kind of the happy...
medium.
Missing link between the Blonde Showman and the later Blackface style.
Oh, okay. Because I know, like, my Bandmaster, that tremolo is a unique
sound. That circuit's only on the very early 60s Fender amps, and it required three tubes to run that.
Right. But it definitely has a character to it.
Absolutely. There's no other sound like it.
Now, when you're playing surf music now live, what do you use?
On the big gigs, I'm going to drag out the big stuff. There's really nothing like a Fender Showman or even a Bandmaster outdoors, with a strap.
And you have the JBLs? You use the JBLs?
Absolutely. My favorite is, I have a 215 cabinet, but my favorite is that single 15-tone ring cabinet. I just think that thing sounds great.
Oh, wow.
You could use that as a hi-fi speaker.
So you definitely use the 15s instead of the 12s.
That is the sound of surf. It's big cabinets, moving a lot of air. It's got to be played loud or it doesn't quite have the same effect.
Well, let me go around. Bobby, when you do surf stuff, what do you use?
My last show that was a real surf show was a dual Showman with two dual Showman bottoms.
JBLs?
JBLs and a Brown Tolex reverb. And then I use my current rig with all the digital stuff. So I have the combination of the digital reverb and the boingy single unit reverb. And I played through a Zebrawood Strat.
Oh, okay. So you were using the external reverb unit. Most of the guys, there's a DVD that I recommend everybody check out, even though it was designed for, it's called Pounding Surf. And it's basically, it talks about the drummers of surfing, but there's a whole section on the history of surf guitar. And all of those guys are using those original reverb units.
Absolutely.
There is a different sound than using, even then, I was surprised that they weren't using the Blackface
Fenders as much. They were using that separate reverb.
If you can get a blonde one, yeah, the reverb units were unchanged. It doesn't matter what color they are, they're all the same circuit. But the amps are quite different, you know, from a Blackface to an original blonde, early blonde Showman are very, very different amps. Mm-hmm.
And Tom, what do you use when you do the surf stuff?
I haven't done it in about 50 years until recently. So I went back to dancing, and all these guys kept playing, so that's kind of why I...
You got this beautiful Jaguar.
I still have... this is a 63, and I still have a 65 Rickenbacker that I even used also back when the Beatles were coming in. So I still have the guitars, but my amps I got long gone, and I... I was using Standells and...
Remember the Standells? Yeah,
they had JBLs in them, too.
They did. They absolutely did. So that's what I was using back in the day of the Chancellors.
Oh, okay. So you were with the Standell amp. I mean, they were pretty loud, and they're big, too. Yeah. They were
What about you, Jeff? What's your go-to?
Well, I always had the Bandmaster. We bought that in a place in Orange County, KKLE Music.
Al Kaley and KKLE.
And I was telling them out before the show, the only thing that ever happened to it was it blew the transformer after about 6 months, and we took it back, and they fixed it. And I think maybe 25 years, 30 years after that, the pilot light went out. And that was about it. That amp... Now, I finally recapped it. It's been like 45 years or so since I've had it, but that was about it, and it plays great. It's a killer amp. It's a different sound because I have the Oxford speakers in it. Mm-hmm. So besides using it for like surf music and stuff, it's a darker sound, but it's really good if you want to get that grunge like Neil Young. I can get Alabama like... You know, grab my Les Paul, but that it's really a great sounding amp. I use a deluxe without reverb. I got it's a 64, I think. It says Fender Electric on it, and it has a. I put in a Weber JBL. They're California, and it's got a Neomag, so it's not so heavy. I use that a lot for session work, and that's usually my go-to amp for most stuff because I don't usually play real loud if I'm recording or whatever. And then today I have the Vibrochamp here. It's a little silver face one. Mm-hmm. And then I have that reverb unit. So I'm weird because most of the amps I found amps, like I have a Princeton without reverb. I have the Deluxe without the reverb. Vibrochamp without reverb, but I finally got the reverb unit, so I'm cool.
You're covered.
So anyway, no, it's interesting. And then... I know that the Ventures later endorsed the Mosrite guitars, mm-hmm. and they use it. Did you ever use Mosrite?
I have a Mosrite bass, and I briefly had a Mosrite guitar. The problem being is I have very large hands, and those necks are tiny. Mm-hmm. And I plugged it in. I go, geez, you know, I can't really play this guitar. It was just too tiny of a neck for me. Mm-hmm. And the fret, they had very small frets on it. So I got rid of my Mosrite and went back to the Fenders.
Yeah, no, I remember a bunch of bands used them, and they had the bigger pickup like a Jazzmaster. And they became real popular when the Fuzz Tone came out because it had a little more gain than some of the other guitars.
Correct.
And so I noticed a lot of guys were using it. I think the original guitarist, Eric Braun from the Iron Butterfly, that's what he used mm-hmm. on Inagata De Vita was a Mosrite.
When you think about it, you know, the Fender guitar went into a doldrums... Starting with the Beatles, when they killed surf music in 1964, nobody was playing Fender guitars. And you have to go all the way up to Jimi Hendrix. There's a large gap in the timeline there where almost nobody was playing a Fender guitar. Everybody was playing Gibsons and Rickies and all that kind of stuff.
What time frame was that?
Well, when we think about it, we can pinpoint the death of surf music as we know it, the first wave of surf music, to a very specific date, you know, February 9th. 1964, that's when the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan. Nobody wanted to hear surf music all of a sudden. They wanted mop tops, and they wanted vocals, and they wanted to see those cool Gretsch and Rickenbacker guitars. So surf music was all of a sudden a forgotten art form.
Well, but at that time, too, in the early 60s, when the, for example, the Beach Boys, and we've had Denny Tedesco on talking mm-hmm. about the Wrecking Crew, and a lot of those guys were using Rickenbackers like Tom uses. And especially the Rickenbacker 12-string was used on a lot of the Jan and Dean members. They doubled the guitars. Did a lot of the surfers use any of those, or the Fender 12-string?
Only to a very small degree. When you think about it, I cannot remember a surf song that has a 12-string on it. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking, and you know, there's almost... no instance I can think of other than perhaps a rhythm guitar.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They didn't use it for a lead. It really didn't become a lead instrument.
Well, you know who,
McGuinn.
Who really popularized the 12-string in what you might call surf music, of course, was Carl Wilson. He played one for years, and he would even play lead on it. You listen to a lot of those Beach Boys cuts. That's all done on a 12-string. You know,
oh, okay.
So, but that
might have been because they used it on the Wrecking Crew played.
I just think he fell in love with that guitar because he used it for years and then went back to his Jag.
Well, it was interesting because the Rickenbacker, the way it was set up, it was the reverse of acoustic guitar. The acoustic guitar 12-string, the light string is first. Mm-hmm. So when you're going down the guitar, it's the octave first. And on the Rickenbacker, it was reversed.
Yeah.
So a lot of them, I know in the studio, they liked to use a 12-string tube.
Right.
It gave it a little fuller sound.
Exactly. And, of course, here's how stupid I was. I bought a nice 65 Rickenbacker in a pawn shop for about $100 when I was back in about 1972, and I didn't know, so I strung it up the way I saw a regular guitar, so I had the small string first. So,
yeah. Well, a lot of people, I think, did.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out why it wouldn't tune up very good. I think it was the reason.
Well, I noticed that the nut, it just wouldn't fit in
backwards.
The nut, right? Yeah, you know. But that was really, you know, I noticed that they did that, and I think also the Wall of Sound that Phil Spector did, they used that, because they would use like three guitarists doing that. Now, in playing now, let's talk about when did it come back?
Well, we can look at, there's been a second and third wave of surf music, and who knows what wave we're in now. Here's in a nutshell, there's one man we can look at who was almost single-handedly resurrected surf music in about 1979 or 80, and that was, of course, John Blair of John and the Night Riders fame. And not only is he an author and put out many books on surf music, he was the guy that really put surf music back on the map. And they had a very brief heyday. We had a lot of bands, like a couple of bands back east. We had Bob Daly's band. We had a few more like the surf punks who were sort of vaguely surfy. And we also had all the new wave bands who wasn't necessarily surf music, but it sounded surfy, you know.
Yeah.
That incorporated a lot of surf elements. When you that movement lasted probably 2 or 3 years, had a pretty good run, and then it was forgotten again until 1995 when, guess what, Quentin Tarantino put out Pulp Fiction. And that was really the explosion. That soundtrack album with nothing but vintage surf stuff on it really set the stage for what we consider now to be a worldwide explosion of surf music. Here's, of course, the sad story is that surf music is way more popular in Europe and Japan than it is here. If you go over to Europe, they have surf bands everywhere, and they're all really, really good. And they've taken up the mantle and moved it on to the next generation. Here in America, you see almost nobody under our age playing surf music. And we are of a certain age, so to speak. Which is very sad because we're trying to keep this music alive.
It's an incredible legacy, and also too, it influenced my playing later. I mean, a lot of different things that I was doing, whether it was session work, some of the guitar sounds that I would use. A lot of times, for example, if I was playing something that was a really heavy distorted sound, I would take this Jaguar and double it direct through the board. Mm-hmm. And play it clean, like, you know, I have a reverb on here right now, but I mean, I would be playing it really clean and just mix that in to give it a little bit more clarity. And I used to use this, I remember I had to do a session with my Rickenbacker 12-string, and they didn't want to use an amp. They wanted me to go direct. So I plugged the reverb in and turned the reverb off because it has the same preamp as the Fender, and the Fender preamp has a mid-range boost to it. So that was the trick. I would use this reverb as a preamp going into the board, and I could get the clean Fender sound.
Right.
And then they would use their BX-10 reverb or EMT plate, and I'd get this beautiful reverb, lush reverb, but I would get that sound. So it was interesting, but that was all from listening to the surf music, the tone and stuff of that, and a lot of the, I mean, this sound here, I got reverb vibrato on here. This tone, I would use this a lot for sessions for use that sound a lot for as a rhythm guitar for later disco and funk stuff.
Yeah, you're looking at one of the great rhythm guitars there. The Fender Jag is probably unparalleled to be an accompanying instrument.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. I learned, a couple of my friends had worked at Fender and stuff, and there was a couple of things I learned about these guitars. One, these pickups were more powerful than Strat or Tele pickups. Mm-hmm. So I've used this on a high gain setup, and this sucker screams. It's a screamer. And so a lot of people don't realize that these pickups are actually more powerful than, you know, I mean, obviously the Strat is what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now everybody has higher gain pickups, and you can put anything you want on it. But this guitar was pretty powerful. And then also, too, a lot of people forgot. I mean, now it's a lot of newer groups are using the Jazzmaster. But that was just a killer guitar. I mean, when I was taking lessons, my guitar teacher had one of those. I always wanted it. It was just real mellow. And it had the Jaguar has the switch. There's two sets of circuits in here, just like the Jazzmaster, where you have a full rhythm. You have a whole rhythm section with a volume and tone, and then you can switch, and then you have a brighter...
Right. Now that only works on the bass pickup, correct?
The top one, yes. And I think it's the same on the jazz.
Yes, so the same circuit.
So you had like a rhythm section, and Fender did some interesting stuff. So you had like a rhythm. You can go here. So you're doing your rhythm thing, and then you switch to your lead. So they already had like a preset type of thing back then.
They were weeks ahead of their time on that one.
Yes. And now you use a Strat. Let's talk a little bit about the equipment. Let's just go around the table here. And now you use a Strat predominantly.
I own a Jazzmaster and I own a Jaguar. The reason I don't play my Jag is, once again, I have large hands, and that scale of the Jaguar is even
smaller,
shorter than a Gibson scale. So it's very difficult for me. It's like playing a mandolin. You know, Fender's Strats and Jazzmasters are 25.5-inch scale, so it gives me a little more room to move around. And of course, to me, there is really a much more versatile guitar than the Strat, because you can get so many different sounds out of it. Here's something that I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, that if you modify a Strat with a very simple circuit, I have a little push-pull knob here, I can get the outer two pickups, which is not part of the stock wiring.
Which is more like a Tele sound.
No, it's more like a Jaguar sound.
Okay.
I can get a very credible Jaguar tone out of it. Now, if that was just on the treble pickup, it was... I got too much reverb on here. I apologize, but
because we had on the show one of our early Flow guitar shows, we had Del Casher, and mm-hmm. he had the two pickups, but he said he used it to get like that Tele sound,
right?
So, but that's it. Yeah, that sounds.
And I can get all three pickups with that modification too. It's very simple, very uninvasive.
Now, when would you use a Jazzmaster opposed to a Strat?
Probably playing early Venture stuff. I just prefer it for that sound because it was a little more authentic. That was what they used on some of those early recordings. I think Bob Vogel played most of his lead stuff on a Jazzmaster.
And that's a mellower all around.
It is a mellower sound. However, the treble pickup has plenty of bite to it. I think most of the guys used it in the middle position to get that thunky sound, and I can't demonstrate it on this guitar, but it gets that hollow kind of cool sound.
Yeah,
a lot of the surf guys use.
Okay, and then Mel, you used the Strat when you were doing anything particular on that Strat? Is it wired standard or is it pretty?
I don't remember how that was wired. You know, I've been using these custom guitars now by Peavey for years, and
yeah, you have a Peavey here now, and it sounds pretty authentic. I mean,
it's got 64 pickup combinations.
Wow, he's got three pickups in there. They're dual coil. Humbucker.
Yeah, they're all dual coil. Each one has a coil tap, so that's humbucking. That's parallel humbucking. That's single coil for that pickup.
Okay.
That's the second pickup.
Give us a little demo.
Yeah, what's the difference between parallel humbucking?
That's single coil on that pickup. That's parallel humbucking. That's humbucking. So the parallel is sort of in between the two. But it's a different kind of humbucking. I've noticed in some gigs where there's an airport nearby, got all kinds of electromagnetic noise, and humbucking will buzz like a single coil. single coil's out of this world, you know, it's just buzzing. And parallel will work. You know, I don't use that as much for tone as I do for which one works better for humbucking.
Mm-hmm.
I like the single coil sound for some things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just got a... When you combine... This switch, this is the back pickup. This is the back pickup in this switch.
Mm-hmm.
So in this position, I've got these two pickups.
Okay.
All three pickups. These two pickups, right?
Yeah, so he has like a three pickup. He's a three pickup setup, so he it's can like go a, from the back. Like
two Les Paul switches.
Yeah.
And then individual coil taps with three positions. And so I showed you those positions. Now that's this switch. So that's the front pickup. That's these two.
That's the middle and bridge pickup, okay.
No, that's just this pickup.
Middle pickup.
This is this switch.
Okay.
This is this pickup and this switch.
Okay.
Was that guitar designed for you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been using this configuration for
what model
40
is that?
Years.
Is that your signature
it's
model?
It's my own model. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's it's and, a PD.
Got so much reverb, but... A little bit thicker. A lot thicker.
Do you notice a difference between the parallel and the humbucker when you're high gain? Is there a difference?
Well, the hotter the pickup is, you know, more it drives it, you know.
But I mean, in terms of tone, you're not seeing that much difference in
tone.
Well,
you hear some of it, but you lose some of the subtleties when you're getting all that grunge in it, you know.
Does that guitar have electronics?
No, my other guitar... the other PV Custom does. It has three-band EQ, too. So it buffers the signal so I can use a long cable. And, it's like not having a cable. You know? So it's just a little brighter. The other thing is I usually put a cap on the volume control, so as I roll it down, it gets brighter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So like, for this one doesn't have it, unfortunately. So for, like... would get brighter, mm-hmm. which actually is effective when you're trying to finger pick. And as you're turning it down on the one that's buffered, when I use a compressor, it'll bring that volume all the way up to full gain, except I can use this volume as a brightener.
Okay. All right.
Which is really a kind of a cool thing. You get a lot of sizzle on chords. That's a little bit of that sort of in-between pickup like a Strat will get.
Mm-hmm.
This the...
It has a lot of character, the tone. You're getting a nice tone.
Tune that Bobby was going to perform all queued up here.
Let's do it.
We can demonstrate a lot of the tones here.
All right, let's go for it.
This is a classic by, of course, Freddie King. A lot of surf bands covered it. It's not really a surf song, but I thought we should inject a little bit of blues into the whole thing. Anyway, you'll recognize this one.
This guitar just sounds great. I'm just going to sit back and watch.
Thank you.
That is great. I mean, the tone of that guitar is just killer. And I want to mention, too, you guys are both using Quilter amps, and one of them is a prototype. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. When Pat, he conquered the world at QSC. Basically, there was no more mountains for him to climb there. He'd done accomplished about everything he could accomplish. So he retired from day-to-day operations at QSC and went back to his first love, which was building guitar amps. Now, back in the day, he had this great idea. I'm going to make these great solid-state guitar amps. They're going to take over the world. PV and Custom, they made solid-state guitar amps, but they weren't very good. And Pat had some really good stuff, but basically nobody bought them. But he had a great design in his head and a great concept in his head. So now technology, 40 years later, has kind of caught up with him, and he was able to design a super small amp with 200 watts through an 8-inch speaker that will
are tiny little amps, but they got 200 watts. We're not, of course, using 200 watts, but
it kicks my Showman's you-know-what.
Yeah.
And they are wonderful. The prototype that Bobby's playing through, basically he made about 25 of them and sent them out to everybody who would agree to play one. Here, just take this. Play it. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me what you like. He got all this feedback, and through that he created his MicroPro series, and which has been a huge success. And through all the feedback from all the different players, everybody from Albert Lee to local guys like me, they all gave him their two cents and said, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I like about it. This is what I don't like about it. The result is the MicroPro, which is just a wonderful
bag. It's great. It's so small, and it's so powerful. And also, too, I have to give kudos to Pat for this. I was mentioned to you guys before. I just love the Steel Air.
Yes.
Even though it's for pedal steel, it's actually a great guitar plug.
It's the closest thing he has to do a surf amp because it's got a single 15. It's louder than snot, and it's kind of a an amp with a lot of clean headroom, like a Fender Showman.
Yeah, but he has a good distortion circuit too in there. It's a nice,
very nice.
He's really got the clip down. It's really, really nice.
It's and believe me, I'm the biggest tube snob there is, and for him to win me over, I'm leaving most of my tube gear at home.
So it takes the place of your Showman.
A big outdoor show, but almost anywhere else, I'm going to be taking my Quilter rather than lugging the big stuff around.
No, they're great. Well, as I told you guys, it just flies by. But we're going to have everybody come back, too. I definitely want you guys back because there's so much more to cover. We just covered a few things, and I'm going to have Bobby come in. I want to talk about some of the other stuff. I presume this is the guitar you use for Steppenwolf.
No.
This
is a very recent guitar, no. Back in Steppenwolf days, I used a... there's clips. I can show you some YouTube. I had a Les Paul.
Because you're doing a lot of different things, and you're a whole show in yourself. I mean, there's so much more to what he's doing. But real quick, for Bobby, www.bobbycochran.com, and for Tom, the family, friends, and fans of the 1960s Orange County musicians, can people like that page and find out what's going on? Because you guys are playing are playing all the time.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of reunions, and I'm doing a monthly. Right now, we've got tribute bands, top tier tribute bands, going once a month. And last 2 weeks ago, I put some of the Orange County surf legends as the opening act for the Beach Boys group.
Oh, cool!
So some of the guys that are in that 65 to 75 first tier range all came on. I think we had 9 of them.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
Yeah, all original out of original bands.
A lot of reverbs.
Yes. I've never seen that many Fender reverbs on one.
Can I get in a quick shout out to an event here? It's held every August here in Southern California. This, for any of you local listeners, we have our annual Surf Guitar 101 convention, which is going to be held August 8th in Garden Grove. All you have to do is get on surfguitar101.com website. You'll get all the information on it. We have bands from all over the world. I have nothing to do with it other than I'm performing with the legend Paul Johnson in a very short set early in the day, but it's going to be an all-day affair. Mm-hmm. If you want to find out more about surf music, this is where you want to go because you'll get the full experience.
Where else can they go? I couldn't find URL for the Sierra Surf Music Camp.
Sierra Surf Music Camp. Thank you again for mentioning that, and I'd be remiss. There is Sierra Surf Music Camp. Sierra Surf Music. Sierra Surf Camp. fantasycamp.com. This is an annual thing we do up in the Sierras. It's a fantasy camp for aspiring surf musicians of all stripes, all ages, all instruments.
Okay.
And we're going to do it, I think, in July this year. So go to sierrasurfcamp.com
okay.
or .org, and you'll find all the information on it.
And then real quick, any upcoming gigs? I know you just mentioned August 8th,
yes,
the Surf Guitar 101. Anything, Bobby, to mention?
I'm playing at Mr. V's in La Mirada on the 7th of August, 7 o'clock to 10:30. The 14th and 15th there also. I'll be at the Salvage Bar in L.A., on the 19th, I believe.
Okay. And then you're doing a Beatles thing, right? You're going to bring that Rickenbacker out.
I know. I'm doing a Beatles Stone show on August 9th at the Garden Grove Elks Lodge, and you're looking at the Stones bass player right over there.
All right. You know, if he just uses a real straight face,
yeah.
I think, and hold the bass really up there,
you got it.
I think he'll be right there. And, the next time the next surf show we do, I'll bring the Rickenbacker in.
There you go.
Actually, I'll bring both of them in. There's two of them.
The
12-string and the 6-string, we can try it. See if we can figure out if it was, you know, if it was used on a certain surf song. But anyway, thank you guys again. I really appreciate you guys being on here. It's just a pleasure. It's great seeing all this gear. I mean, this room is full. Ronan, thanks for running the board, because I've been sitting back here listening to everybody play. We're going to go ahead and take it out with let's play a song.
Let's go out with a bang here. This is, of course, the classic, probably the most influential and requested surf song of all time. You know it, you love it. Play along if you're at home with it.
All right. Good night, everybody.